Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Today, a show for those of you who are panicking over that big Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow. We've got two of the best chefs in Kansas City with us, and we'll be talking about all manner of turkey travails and fielding your last-minute questions about the big feast. We'll run through some of their all-time favorite Thanksgiving recipes and how to soup up some of those traditional but tired Turkey Day dishes. Our chefs are Selena Teo. She's owner and executive chef from Julian in Brookside. Selena, nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And Chef Ted Hebiger is back. He's owner, executive chef at Room 39 on 39th Street. Ted, always good to have you, too.
How are you?
Good morning. Good. Great. And our phone lines are wide open for your questions. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org. Again, 816-235-2888. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you both, and not to spoil the mood, but are you guys working tomorrow? Selena, I think you are.
I am.
She's working hard tomorrow.
Yeah. You got a full house.
Yeah.
It's a popular day to come.
It's one of the busiest days, and with the weather, who knows?
Yeah, your patio could be up and running,
right? See you on the patio.
No kidding. But you're not open tomorrow.
No. I refuse to work on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, just what, for family reasons and common sense reasons?
I don't know. I mean, I probably would do a lot of business if I was open.
I was going to say, it's her biggest day, she says, of the year.
Yeah. Well, she gets all my business, too. No, it's such a deal for me and my family that I decided to take it off and cook for just 12 instead of 200, I think.
Yeah, at least 200 tomorrow. Yeah.
At least 200.
Yep.
Still be busy all day today.
Yep.
Getting ready. Yeah.
Yep. 24 cheesecakes we're working on.
How many turkeys? That was my question.
Yeah, how many turkeys?
120 pounds.
Wow.
How many turkeys is that?
I actually do just turkey breast because a good majority of the people want that. Mm-hmm. And then I have some pheasant for those that want some dark meat.
Mm-hmm. So that's how you break it up then
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But you cook at home.
Right. I usually, you know, in years past, it used to be at my parents' house, but a couple years ago, I took it over and do it at my house.
Yeah, and how many folks are you going to have in?
Just 12 this year. It started out as just myself and my wife and our kids because my parents are out of town, but it's morphed into a larger event. So I've got neighbors coming by now and two different families, so it's getting bigger as we speak.
You have to have the kids entertain each other, right?
That's right.
So what's on the menu that might be out of the ordinary a little bit at Julian? Anything notable?
Actually, not really. I'm kind of a traditionalist on this day, and I think most people want to do
that. People want the traditional stuff.
Yeah, kind of, when I'm on the phone talking to people, they're like, what are you serving? I'm like, pretty much everything you want to eat but don't want to clean up.
Yeah.
So I have butternut squash soup, roasted turkey breast, dressing, candied sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, giblet gravy,
pumpkin
cheesecake.
Pipe.
Yep.
Yeah. How about you, Ted? What are you going to serve at your house?
I don't normally do a turkey. I usually do some sort of other fowl. So this year I'm going to do roast duck at home.
Really?
Which the last time I did that was I was living in a tiny little railroad apartment in New York City, and I did roast duck in probably a 75-year-old oven and for myself and my sister and her husband and their kid. And it was fantastic. So I'm looking forward to doing it again this year.
Why not turkey?
I have like a top 10 list of favorite birds to eat, and turkey's probably 11 or 12 or 13.
Why?
It's kind of dry and tasteless
for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be done right if you brine it and all the things.
We'll talk about that later on.
And I'll have some turkey available. I always make sure that I've got some. But, you know, duck is probably number one for me on my bird list.
So. And if I'm cooking at home, I usually do duck as well. Or lobster.
Lobster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you just boil it up?
I just par cook the lobster and then bring them up slowly in a Bermonte, which is like a butter water emulsion sauce, and just stays melt in your mouth good.
Oh, that sounds scary. That sounds scary.
I've always wanted to do seafood at Thanksgiving, and I've never pulled it off. You know, I've always kind of stuck with that traditional stuff, but that sounds good.
Yeah. Usually on Thanksgiving Day, I go to the walk-in at the restaurant and raid it and then go back home.
Well, we'll attempt to field your questions and help you solve your big Thanksgiving dinner dilemmas that you're facing tomorrow. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Chef Ted Hebiger and Selena Teo from Julian are here in the house to answer your questions. Let's go to some phone calls that are already piling in. Kelly from Kansas City, Kansas. Kelly, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Have a question. I have a 20-pound turkey. Family wants to eat tomorrow at 2. I don't want to get up tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock to put it in the oven. Can I put it in the oven like tonight at midnight and cook it for like the 8 hours and then just keep it covered and low tomorrow till 2? Will it get too dry or?
Oh, I think you're overthinking it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Oh,
do you have the stuffing on the inside?
No, uh-uh.
So you're going to cook it without stuffing on the inside?
Generally,
a 20-pound bird,
right?
You could probably cook, what do you think, Selena, about 3 hours?
Well, I have a trick that I do, and it was just listed in the Kansas City Star, as a matter of fact, last week's preview section. If you go to the hardware store and you get a metal pipe, cover the pipe with foil and stick it through the cavity of the bird, so the pipe gets hot and if there's air flowing through it, it kind of creates its own little convection oven. And so it cooks probably – you can cut about an hour and a half off of that bird probably cook time. So
that's a good idea.
You could probably cook that in 3 hours instead and then
– with the pipe you're saying.
With the pipe through it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to serve it at 2 –
what temperature are you talking about?
I do probably 300, 280, 300.
So not super hot.
No. I mean, okay. I crank up the heat. Usually we do high heat in the beginning or at the end because you can't have it at a constant temperature the whole time. So, and the other trick to crispy golden skin is I put a clarified butter in a squeeze bottle, keep it warm, and every now and then just squirt the surface of the skin with clarified butter. You'll get super crispy, delicious turkey skin.
Mm, yeah. So if I want to just cook it in the oven, though, and cover it with foil – how long do I really need to cook it?
Well, I would leave the foil off of it at the beginning especially and maybe start with a little higher temperature, maybe 350.
350?
And do an hour. And then after an hour, go ahead and cover it. You'll want to remove that cover again for the final half hour of cooking. But if you I would say if you want to serve it at 2, try to make it and so you're pulling it out of the oven at like 115 and so it can rest.
Crucial.
That resting part is the most important thing you can do for keeping the meat from being dry.
Mm-hmm.
How many hours altogether?
Well, let's say you're pulling it out at 1 o'clock. If you started at 8 in the morning at 3:50 for an hour and then cover it, you've got yourself plenty of leeway there. And then
it can rest properly. And then if you have to pop it back in a 3:50 oven – just to bring surface temperature back up or whatever, then you can do that. But the internal temperature will still stay really high.
Great. Thank you so much.
So sleep in
tomorrow,
Kelly.
Don't put it in at midnight.
Yeah, don't do that.
not at midnight. Okay.
Yeah. All the best to you, Kelly.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So why is resting a turkey so important, Selena?
It's the same thing as any piece of meat. Turkey meat, it allows the juice to like go back into the flesh. If you just take something out of a high-temperature oven or pan –
yeah.
You've probably done this at home. You cooked a steak. You're so eager to eat it. You put it on the cutting board and you slice right into it and all the juice runs and blood runs all over your cutting board.
Yeah.
And something that could be a medium cooked piece of meat ends up looking and tasting like it's well done because you just drained that of all of its yummy goodness.
So let it rest for half hour, you're saying?
Depends on the size. I mean, if you – just a single portion of meat, the rule is I let it rest for at least 3 to 5 minutes. For a single piece portion that's like 6 ounces. Mm-hmm. So the larger the piece, the longer you have to rest it. And so when you're talking about a whole turkey, you know, you want to let it rest for at least 30 minutes or more.
Wow.
Same with like a whole brisket if you're smoking a whole brisket or something like that. Same thing.
Well, depending on if you have kids around the house, you can kind of do one of these things where you finish cooking it, pull the oven door open, let that oven smells and everything kind of warm up the house, turn off the oven. And let the turkey rest in there. And that will get – I mean, you can let it rest like that for an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And that's okay to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you need Turkey Day advice, you're calling the right place. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Meredith from Kansas City North, you're on with Selena Teo and Ted Habiger. Meredith, good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I've never been a huge turkey fan. My mother and I, after we stopped doing the whole family, the big family thing, we figured that, you know, if we were going to be thankful for something, we should be thankful for something we loved and didn't get very often. So we have lobster.
There you go.
But, But, you know, now there's other people in my life, and, you know, some of them want to do turkey. How do you keep it from being dry? I mean, I've heard, like, put butter on the outside. Does that work? Or
we were talking earlier about brining. I have 120 pounds turkeys for the restaurant tomorrow. They're on brine right now.
And what does that mean?
Brining is just water, sugar, salt, herbs, aromatic things together. I can email anybody
soak
in brining.
Them, you're yep. talking completely.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally submerge them. So they're in the brine for, it will be 3 days by the time I cook them tomorrow.
Wow.
And so I have things like brown sugar, salt, black peppercorns, thyme, sage, bay leaf, and coriander. And so all that will totally, through like osmosis, so, you know, like as a little boy when you're playing with slugs and salt, yeah. same sort of things going on there. Yeah. All that flavor will be throughout the entire turkey. So you're not just having seasoning on the outside, on the skin. It's all the way through the flesh.
Mm. And the salt helps concentrate the juices on the inside of the bird.
Mm.
Like, you know, a combination of resting plus brine plus, you know, even like in, I believe in the Kansas City Star last week, and Howard Hanna from the Rieger was talking about putting a blanket of bacon over the top.
You know, if you, you're at home and you want to brine your turkey, you would do that where? Where do you
do it? It's kind of difficult because it takes up a lot of room in your fridge. I use I have a second fridge in my basement, and I use a 5-gallon bucket from Home Depot or something, a pickle bucket, and put it in that, you know, and then sometimes if the weather's correct, if it's below 40 degrees outside, you know, you don't have any animals that are going to come take it from you. You can just wrap that in plastic wrap in a bucket and stick it outside.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately,
it's been a little warm the last couple of years.
Or more
can't
today.
Do that right now.
Well, Meredith,
does
I hope
it
that
make
helps.
It really salty?
Not if you're careful, you know, and then at the end, you may not. I mean, you need to add salt to everything to bring out the flavor without being
aggressive.
Aggressive. If you taste the salt, it's too salty.
I was going to say, how much salt do you put in a 5-gallon bucket?
Was it about a cup per 2 gallons or so? That's
probably
generally what
that,
I do. I kind of eye it usually myself because I've been doing it so long. But but it's about a cup of salt for 2 gallons, and only a portion of that ends up in the turkey.
Right.
You know,
if you shoot me an email, I can email you a brine recipe exactly.
What's your email address?
info@juliankc.com.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Meredith, good
by
luck
the way,
to you.
I love room 39.
Thanks.
I've never been to the other ladies' restaurant, but I'd like to.
Oh, it's very good.
Well, that other restaurant is Julian in Brookside, so check it out, Meredith.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Happy days, yeah. Wes from Kansas City, Missouri. Wes, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanks.
Go ahead, Wes.
Hey, I've got a real easy question, I hope. I have a childhood nostalgic recipe I want to make. It's a wild rice and goose casserole, but it's hard to find a goose, and when I do find them at the store, they're like $70, and I'm hoping that your chefs may have a local resource for a goose that's reasonably priced.
Ted's nodding his head.
Yeah.
He has the answer.
I've bought goose many times from Mike McGonigal, and he doesn't consider them to be – I mean – he treats them as everything else. You know, he prices it up for what he needs to get for them to make a profit, but he doesn't consider them to be rare birds or anything. 70 is too much. That's very expensive. That's $10 a pound probably.
What should you pay?
I bet about $4 or $5 a pound. So it's still going to be $40 or $50 for a whole goose.
But 70 is too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's great. Thanks so much.
Good luck, Wes. Yeah.
Thanks.
Is it illegal to catch and butcher your own?
I believe so.
Yeah.
we had a
otherwise, there'd be a whole bunch of people down at the plaza.
Yeah.
Lots of geese next door at the Discovery Center.
And I wouldn't eat those anyway. You know, most of the geese that we get are farm-raised and, you know, haven't been eating everything that's around. So, a bird is exactly what it eats, so.
Is that right?
Try to keep its diet simple.
Well, how about fish? Fish eat all kinds of junk, and we eat fish. You know,
well,
it seems to work out okay.
That's why there's kosher laws for those bottom
fish.
Feeders.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true.
Did you ever have a puffin? They taste like fish.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. I should just point out that the other day, Ted met up with KCUR's digital media specialist, Julia Deneche, to carve a turkey. You can watch the video they made about the right way to carve your bird on our website, kcur.org. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Sim from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Sim.
I was wondering, this is my first year cooking turkey breast, so I was wondering if you had any tips for me.
Are you cooking just the breast?
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to brine it?
No.
I would say you still have time.
Yeah, you have time to brine. If it's just a breast, that you could just do that overnight, and it's a short cook time in the morning.
Yeah, and for something like that, you probably need just about a gallon of water and half a cup of salt, half a cup of sugar, and then grab some bay leaves and
black peppercorns
at the very least. Herbs. And then if you have some other things around, coriander or thyme or something, put that in there. Bring all that liquid to a boil and cool it down. Mm-hmm. And one way you can do it that's kind of a trick is that you can take a smaller amount of water to start out with, but the same amount of the other ingredients, and bring that to a boil, and then add ice to it until it reaches that gallon stage that then you can dunk that breast in and do that overnight. And then in the morning,
you're good to go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. Thanks.
Well, good luck. Sim. Hope it works out. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
You too.
What about some other, good ideas for ways to freshen up some of those tired old Thanksgiving recipes, like mashed potatoes or the squash? Any brilliant thoughts on that end of things?
I did something this weekend, which was kind of fun. There was an interactive feature in the New York Times talking about Thanksgiving. It's called the Thanksgiving Orator. And I thought it was really neat. And it asks you if you're a modernist, a hedonist, an extremist, a baconist, all these things. And one of the recipes I ran into, and I ended up putting it on the menu, was the regular dish with the sweet potatoes and the marshmallows on top. It's kind of a classic. It's not my favorite dish, but it's still good, and it's kind of old school. But I modernized it a little bit by I made marshmallows myself, which you can do or you cannot do. And then wrap that in pureed sweet potato, and then wrap that in a coating and fried them.
Oh my gosh!
And the marshmallow ends up like melting on the inside when you cut into it. That was a lot of fun.
I would just have that for dessert. I wouldn't have that as a side dish to turkey.
Yeah. What do you do to sort of bring new life to old dogs?
I do the same. I mean, I do roasted sweet potato puree with house made marshmallows too, and I still think it's good. The marshmallow has to be minimal though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm a soup person. That's like the biggest thing I like to do on Thanksgiving. And on this day, I don't usually modernize it. I just go old school.
Yeah.
I do kind of avoid the canned soup recipes a little bit. Although my wife always wants me to include one. She's like, you got to do the green bean casserole. You always have to do that.
But you can do that with fresh mushrooms.
I know. And real cream and everything.
But your point is, it's really not a day for exotic adventures for the most part.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of stress involved usually for people. I mean, I think for Selena and I, we feel very comfortable with our abilities and everything. So it's easy to go out of the mainstream. But when you've got people coming to your house, you want to keep things simple. And to me, the most important thing isn't necessarily the food. It's the people getting together, and anything that keeps you from having to be in the kitchen the entire day away from everybody else, I think, is important.
How do you avoid lumpy gravy?
The secret is if you're using like a canned stock or something like that, or use sodium free so you can determine how much salt you want in there for starters. If you're making your own stock, that's better, obviously. But the night before, a couple days before, just put it in the refrigerator and make sure that it's cold. So when you're making your roux, which is flour and butter, to thicken your gravy, or if you have any old bacon fat that you save or any kind of fat you can use as your thickening agent, you always have to make sure one of two things. Your stock is cold and your roux is hot. Or your roux is cold and your stock is hot, then you will have no lumps ever.
I couldn't agree with you more. You want your roux hot, your stock cold. Yeah, absolutely. What do you do, Ted?
That's Thanksgiving 101 right there.
Yeah. Right there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to back to some calls here. 816-235-2888 for your Thanksgiving feast questions. We have some great experts in the studio to give you a hand here. Chef Ted Habiger from Room 39 and Selena Teal from Julian in Brookside. Let's go to Zena from Overland Park. Zena, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Well, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And the same to you and your guests. I have a real simple question, and I'm trying to keep it real simple tomorrow. I'm going to use a roasting bag for my turkey, and it's just a small turkey. It's only about 11 pounds. But my question is, do I need to use a thermometer a meat thermometer inside while I'm using the roasting bag.
I've never used a roasting bag. My husband Ken has, and he swore by it.
but
I've never used one,
say.
So I don't really know the answer to that. But you just want to make sure that your internal temperature is 165, and then, you know, let it rest like we were talking about earlier.
And I would do one of those things, like as soon as it gets to like 164, consider pulling it out, because
you'll
get another degree out of it after it's done.
Can I put in the thermometer after the time? In other words, you know, they have instructions on how long the bird should be in the bag. And so once I follow those instructions, when I take the bird out of the bag, can I put in the thermometer then, kind of take its temperature?
Sure, yeah. That's
okay.
And then
just let it rest.
And just put the thermometer closest to the bone, because that's going to be the part that's the coolest part of the bird.
Yeah, really on the inside part of the thigh, to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, but not hitting the bone.
And Zena, before you run, how useful or accurate are those little built-in pop-up plastic things that come in some turkeys?
I think those I mentioned this on the website. I believe those go off at probably 170, 175, because they were designed by lawyers somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
usually if that's popped up, that means your breast is probably going to be a little overcooked.
Oh, that's a good point, because I have a Butterball, and I think Butterball does do that pop-up thing. So maybe that's all I need to worry about.
Most of them these days have them in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And that is the
– I still would pull it out sooner.
Yeah, the alarm that it's certainly cooked at this point.
Yeah. Maybe overcooked.
Maybe a little over. Yeah.
Okay.
Zena, thank you.
Well, thank you. And
have a good holiday.
Your holiday. Yes.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. Kevin Marsha left us this brining tip on KCUR's Facebook page. If your refrigerator isn't large enough to hold your turkey in a brining container, brine the turkey in an insulated cooler. Add ice to the brining mixture to ensure the temperature stays at a safe level while brining.
Fantastic.
Good idea.
Well, hi, Kevin.
Yeah.
Okay.
He can come work for one of us.
Yeah, there you
Innovative
go.
Innovative thinker.
I know, Kevin.
Yeah.
I see him on Facebook all the time.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah. John from Kansas City, Missouri. John, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. I wanted to ask about bread pudding, specifically panettone bread pudding.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite things to make.
Where do you get your panettone from?
I bought it from Farm to Market Bread Company. Mm-hmm. Usually when it's – I don't know if they have any yet. I would think that they probably have
it right now. I'm pretty sure it's out right now in all hen houses and Constantino's markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet it would be. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you could get those other panettones that you see that are in the big boxes that you see in I can't even think of – I've seen them at our Restaurant Depot, which mm-hmm. is a large place to shop for the industry. But those are usually made quite a bit in advance, and they're not as fresh, so they probably have a lot of preservatives in them. But I would suggest the farm to market
for sure
for freshness.
Okay.
How do you make it?
You know, my favorite recipe is if you take one of their loaves. Let's see if it. You might need two. Okay, so if you take two of their loaves, because they're a little smaller than the big ones, and you take 2.5 cups of half and half, or mixture of cream and milk, half and half. And then 3 eggs. You heat up the liquid with things like maybe a quarter cup of sugar and a little bit of maple syrup, maybe a little. I like to put ginger in mine. You heat that up, and as soon as that comes up to a boil, then you temper it with the eggs in a mixing bowl. And so you got to be whisking the eggs as you add the liquid, just a little bit at a time. And then you've got all that in there. Chop up the bread into little pieces, and then add that. Mix it thoroughly. Put it in ramekins, bake it at 350 degrees for 15, 20 minutes, and you're done.
Hmm.
The key, though, when you put your bread in, though, give it at least 15, 20 minutes to soak. Do you want that custard to soak all the way through the bread so when you cut into it, you don't hit these dry pieces of bread?
All right. Thanks a lot.
It's almost like a bread flan. Mm-hmm. That's how I prefer to make bread pudding.
Yeah.
I've seen other ones that are a little bit more bready. I don't like those as much.
John, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. What are the best Thanksgiving desserts?
I'm always a fan of the pumpkin cheesecake. That's easy.
Pumpkin cheesecake,
yep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I also like – I'm a good old-fashioned pecan pie kind of person, too.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. We have one more phone call before a break here. Tony from Kansas City, Kansas. Tony, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, how are you? How's everyone?
Great. Thanks, oh, thanks. Tony.
Okay. I want to try a duck again this year. I want to smoke it. And I did one last year, and I injected it and did everything I thought to make it taste real good, and it was greasy, real greasy. And I was expecting it to be somewhat greasy, but no one could eat it.
Wow, and too greasy, what, huh?
Yeah, and I talked to a guy here a couple of days ago, and he said that people take the fat out. How do you take the fat off of a duck?
Well, I don't think you can't really take it out of the inside part of the duck, which there isn't a terribly large amount. Most of the fat is on the outside. And so if you get it frozen, make sure you let it thaw enough and so you can mess with the skin a little bit. And then you can take off some of the excess skin from around the bird. And then when you are getting ready to cook it, if you can get it at a little bit higher heat for a little while and get that skin to crisp up, over a period of time, you'll end up rendering a lot of that fat out. You do have to be careful if this is on a grill because it can catch fire. But, you know, at about 250 degrees in an oven, you know, that kind of excess fat will come off. Like tomorrow when I'm cooking my duck, that'll be a big concern of mine, is not to make it too extra greasy. You kind of have to channel your Chinese market, you know, that's got the duck hanging in the window. It's hanging there because it's dripping all that extra fat off of it.
And also, okay, you want to – drying the skin helps too.
Yeah.
Mm. Getting it crispier. Drying the skin.
Oh, okay. Now, what if I take a fork and poke some holes in it? Would I lose a lot of flavor if I do that?
No, that's a pretty good idea. It's kind of the same principle as, you know, when we're in the restaurant, we're cooking a duck breast, we'll score the skin with a knife, just the skin part. We won't cut into the meat. And you can do that with a whole bird too, and that will allow more surface area from the oven to start rendering that fat off of.
Okay, that sounds great. And when I smoke it, I'm going to have it in an upright smoker with a water up under it.
Mm-hmm.
So would that be the best way, proper way to do it, or should I alleviate the water?
No, the water will be good because that will help catch the fat and then you know, keep that out of the firebox in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll keep that temperature more correct for you.
Well, okay. Okay, thank you very much. Well, you'd be very helpful.
You're welcome.
Tony, let us know how it comes out. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Okay.
You
Thank
bet.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here about how to deal with all those last-minute Thanksgiving meal questions that I'm sure are cropping up today. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Again, 816-235-2888 for all your Thanksgiving questions. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you're just joining us, you're listening to our pre-Thanksgiving Day show. We're running through some of your questions about how to prepare the big feast tomorrow. We're visiting with two great chefs, Selena Teo from Julian in Brookside and Chef Ted Habiger from Room 39 on 39th Street. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. David from Overland Park, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question. I'm going to be trying a new recipe tomorrow, and I need some advice. I have a bird that is, hold on just a second, 18 and a half pounds. And the recipe is going to be weave a mat of bacon and cover the turkey with it. Supposedly, this means that you don't have to baste the bird.
Correct.
Now, my question is, first of all, how long do I cook it, and do I have to worry about, you know, the salt content and the drippings for my gravy and all that kind of fun stuff? Do I just ignore all my other spicing preparations and just go with the turkey, I mean, with the bacon, or how do I do this?
Well, I would say many of the same spices and everything that goes in turkey will go well with bacon. So I wouldn't worry about any of that normal stuff that you do. The bacon itself, as you cook it, will begin to crisp up and, of course, render off its fat and keep you from having to baste it. So that's helpful. And I wouldn't worry about the salt content from the bacon affecting your gravy. You just got to make sure that you know that and in your head when you're seasoning it at the end that you're not adding the normal amount of salt that you would add to your old gravy.
You should be tasting it all along the way anyway.
Yeah, that's a big key. Selena's right. I'm sorry?
I say normally I don't salt things a lot anyway. I use, you know, like peppers and that kind of stuff. I like spicy food, so the salt thing is something that's kind of new to me.
Right. I have a rule about salt. And in our restaurant and at home, I only use kosher salt, which is the salt that I can pick up with my fingers. The iodized salt, if you gave me iodized salt, I wouldn't really know what to do with it because it comes out so fast and it's very salty. Mm-hmm. But with kosher salt, you can usually end up putting on less. And the whole key with salt is that it's there to just bring out the flavor. If you taste the salt, then it's too salty. If you're able to taste, like with chicken stock, plain chicken stock, if you add a little bit of salt to it, let's say it doesn't have any salt to begin with, then you'll start to taste the onions in it and the carrots and some of these other flavors that you wouldn't normally taste.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Well, David, happy Thanksgiving to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
And while David's talking, I'm sitting here enjoying something that Ted's brought
for us today. Can I start chewing
now,
too?
Yes, some Brussels sprouts. So tell us about this, Ted. What do you have here? Because I'm not a huge Brussels sprouts guy in general, but this is terrific.
Sure, sure. It's one of the sides that I do every year. I might change it up a little bit this year, but this is my traditional recipe. This is with bacon that I've cured myself. I didn't smoke it. I don't know if you can tell that, but there's no real smoky flavor on the bacon. It's just cured pork belly. And then searing those Brussels sprouts with the skin side down, and so the cut side really develops a little brown. That's good flavor. And then some shallots and some sage. That's it.
Our producer, Steven Steichman, is sitting here sampling this delicacy. What do you think, Austin?
Too busy. Can't talk.
Yeah. Too busy chewing.
Wow. Yeah. I rediscovered Brussels sprouts about 4 or 5 years ago. In fact, let me finish talking, eating before I talk.
It's an issue.
It is an issue around here. We started making a Brussels sprouts recipe. I can't remember where we got it from. Shaved Brussels sprouts. Absolutely love it. Even our kids like Brussels sprouts, which
you
is something.
Kids usually love. Do like Brussels sprouts as long as they're not out of a can.
Really?
So they've got like a bad they've got a bad reputation, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
They do have a bad reputation because they're horrible out of a can. Like, they shouldn't even exist out of a can.
And that's how I first had them when I was growing up, and I turned nose right at it.
How healthy are they for you?
Oh, God, I don't even think about that.
Yeah, things like that. Who cares?
I'm sure they're really
like
good
that.
For you. I'm sure they are.
Are Brussels sprouts available year-round or just a certain time?
You know, the best time to get them is right after the first freeze.
Oh.
You know, and I've seen them in the store just in the local, like, Sunfresh or something on the stock before.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about, does it make any difference if it's on the stock or off the stock?
It always helps.
Yeah.
So it helps having them on the stock. Why?
Because that's what feeds it, you know, and so they're still more alive.
Yeah.
You know.
Even when they've already been cut from the ground and they're...
There's some residual, you know, something in that stock still.
How popular are Brussels sprouts at your restaurant?
Oh, it's huge.
Me too, Selena,
My parents, or my dad specifically, when we first opened up the restaurant, you know, let's see, it came around to about March or so, and he comes in and he orders Brussels sprouts. He didn't even look at the menu. He orders Brussels sprouts. And I'm like, Dad, they're out of season now. You can't get them. And he looked like he was going to put his fist through the wall.
Brussels sprouts. I thought they were like way down the list of anything people would touch. Really?
They're you know, even if I have a dish on the menu that comes with Brussels sprouts and some people will say, oh, can I get this without the Brussels sprouts and this instead? Of course you can. But I always inevitably send out the Brussels sprouts anyway. And then when I go check on the table to see how they're enjoying everything, they're like, these were so good. Nice. I always thought I hated Brussels sprouts. I'm like, this is why you need to trust us. We know what we're doing. We've been doing this a long time.
Exactly.
I just read Zagat's like 10 most pretentious restaurant moments from this past year. And one of them was a customer complained about the food and then they sent it back to the kitchen and the waiter came back a few minutes later saying, the kitchen tasted it. They said it tastes fine.
You know what? I've actually heard that directly from people.
Really?
Yes. That people do that.
Ouch.
It's crazy.
Really? It is crazy.
It's baffling to me.
Yeah.
They must not be a chef owner because I think that's you have not a totally different perception when you own the place. And, you know.
What do you do when you get a response like that from a customer?
I'm sorry you didn't care for it. Let me find you something that you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just that simple. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're trying to provide some last-minute Thanksgiving meal advice with our two great chefs, Selena Teo and Ted Habiger. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Nicola writes to ask us this. What is a trick to fluffy, non-gluey mashed potatoes? Non-gluey mashed potatoes.
Don't work them too much.
Hmm.
That's first thing, that's
when,
a key.
Yeah, when you're making mashed potatoes, after you strain them, first they should be cooked enough. You don't want them crunchy because then you get these crunchy little bits in your mashed potatoes, and that kind of totally destroys the whole point of fluffy mashed potatoes and smooth and creamy.
Mm-hmm.
Then you want to let all the steam come out.
Mm.
Just let them sit there. Be patient. Let a majority of the steam come out of the potatoes because the more steam, if you put them right in the mixer with cream and butter, you can't put as much cream and butter in there, and that's what makes mashed potatoes good, is the cream and the butter.
Yeah, it's true.
And if the more water that's in there, that because it didn't steam out, you'll be able to put less of that in there. So let them steam out, put them in a mixer, and just make them as quickly as you possibly can. I put them through a ricer or a food mill,
mm-hmm.
and once you do that, then you pour in your melted butter and heavy cream that's hot. You want everything to be hot still. And then you can just use a whisk, and it takes no time at all, and they'll never be gluey.
And the larger you leave the potatoes at the beginning when you've got them boiling in the water, then there's less surface area for that kind of starchiness to end up on the outside of the potato while they're cooking.
Yeah.
And so when I make mashed potatoes, I leave – like I use big russet baking potatoes and put them in the water. I peel them and put them in the water whole and cook them after it starts to boil for 30 or 40 minutes, and then I – cut them up a little bit. After I strain them off, I cut them up a little bit, put them in a ricer, and go from there.
Brian McTavish will be joining us in just a few minutes. So leave some of those Brussels sprouts for him.
I got it.
It'll help him perform a little bit better here today. Another caller asked this. How do you flambe fruit like apricots for dessert?
Really high pan. Make sure I usually pull the pan away from the flame. I mean, you have to catch it on fire, but
mm-hmm.
I always use like whiskey or brandy. So usually saute that your fruit in a high heat, add your sugar or whatever, add your brandy, and then flame it, and then let the alcohol burn off.
Okay. And David asked us on Facebook, what type of metal pipe would you use in a turkey? We talked about, Selena was saying, put a metal pipe in your turkey to help cook it more quickly. Some pipes, David suggests, like copper, might prove to be toxic.
Well, that's why I have you wrap it up in foil.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
That part. Usually I use, if you can get stainless steel, that's what I get.
Yeah.
Or an aluminum pipe.
Okay. That'd be the way to go. What about this idea of roasting the turkey upside down for most of the time and then flipping it over to brown the breast at the end? Is that worth it?
Yeah. That I do that sometimes with geese and mm-hmm. And also with duck. And the whole point is to try to get the fats that are in the skin and inside the bird and the juices to be falling down into the breast while it's cooking and keeping that liquid in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, you turn it over. I've had mixed results with this. It doesn't hurt to try it, that's for certain. The thing that you always end up doing is that you want your presentation to look real nice too. Mm-hmm. And so when it's been on a rack like that, then you'll have lines on it and some other things. But,
yeah.
You know, it's – I think resting is more important necessarily than doing that.
Maybe just a final question here. How about the top things you can do the night before without compromising food freshness on the day of the big feast?
You can cool your stock, cut all your Brussels sprouts. You could parblanch them a little bit if you mm-hmm. want to keep the cooking time down. Definitely make your bread puddings and all your desserts the day or a couple days before you can
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
You could even make your stuffing almost, you know, mm-hmm. The day before and then reheat it the next day.
Yeah.
And then just dump all the turkey drippings on top of the stuffing
right.
afterwards.
Yeah, people don't do that sometimes, but that's
– also the flavor and yummy goodness.
Highly.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both for coming in. So
my
good
pleasure.
To have you both, and happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
To you, too.
So good to have you here. Sure appreciate the Brussels sprouts, too.
Not a problem.
Brian, have you had some Brussels sprouts?
I have not.
You got to start.
I have not.
You can now.
Yeah.
I guess my question is it okay to cook the stuffing in the turkey? Is that okay?
Yes, but you got to be careful because it does take a little bit more time, and there's food safety issues, you know, like if you don't get the internal temperature correct. I like that, but at the same time, I feel like you're going to end up with overcooked meat on the outside before you really get it done correctly.
For sure.
Yeah.
The way you get the flavor of the bird, like we were just talking about, which is why you like cooking it in the bird, is take all those pan drippings and dump it over your stuffing that you've done in the pan.
Yeah.
Does the same thing.
I want to thank Selena Teo from Julian in Brookside, Chef Ted Habiger from Room 39 on 39th Street. Thanks so much, guys. Again, happy holidays to you.
You too.